Welcome to Chapter 44, Winning, the Ultimate Elixir. Well, as I mentioned in Chapter 40, entitled Longport, this whole experience did not bring out the best in everybody. And I'll pick the story up where we left off. I left off with getting the FDA clearance, and now I go back a few years, about 2 years maybe into the life of Longport. We had acquired the rights to this portable version of the scanner from Mary Dyson Guy's Hospital and the patent owner. So we started to make some progress. We did fundraising. We started to, we had clinical studies going on. We had, the stock was reacting in a moderate way. And, you know, we were filed, you know, we hired the FDA consultant and everything was, you know, we were moving along. And then out of the blue one day, we get hit with a lawsuit, from the couple that had, we acquired the license. Back a few years when we were Ventnor. And they apparently had not done much with the company after I left, and then Mary left a short while later. And then Mary and I, just as I said earlier, we continued our relationship, and then circumstances evolved where we came together, formed Longport, and moved on. Well, here's where it gets tricky. This lawsuit that was filed, they categorized it as civil racketeering. The reason they did that, because nobody really heard of such a thing as civil racketeering. When you hear the word racketeering, you're thinking of organized crime or what have you. And they, the Cantwells, hired an attorney, a partner in a law firm in Manhattan, to represent them, a guy by the name of Rovner. Anyway, having a small public company that is under a cloud of any lawsuit is not a good thing, because everything is full disclosure. Having a small public company being accused of civil racketeering, that's a whole nother ball game. That really put a serious obstacle in our path to try to develop this technology, get it through, and get it into the marketplace. And beside that, the thing that was most bothersome to me personally was that Mary was included in this, and Guy's Hospital, and six or seven other entities, individuals or entities. They were going after everybody. And the reason was simple. It was just a classic case of extortion. They couldn't generate a payday through a traditional business success story. Maybe because they were older and didn't feel they wanted to invest the time and energy. I don't know. But they just wanted to intimidate us into settling, and they walk away with the money and figured that we would have to settle at some point if we wanted to move on and build a company. Well, that may have worked a few years before with me, but one of the real few benefits that came out of my experience in Denver that I related earlier with the Justice Department and that whole fiasco, is that I can't be intimidated from that point on. I made up my mind. I felt what it was like to be intimidated, and I wasn't going down that path ever again. So we hired Gavin Lentz from Philadelphia law firm of Becchetto & Lentz. He was the perfect fit. He was a tenacious bulldog of a lawyer who did not have a kind word for New York City lawyers. Anyway, this to show you the frivolity of the lawsuit is this systematic racketeering began with Mary and I. It began at a restaurant. They actually put this in their complaint. I had given Mary a $400 pair of pearls, a necklace, for Christmas. I only mentioned the amount because it was a gesture. If you know anything about the English, they're pretty plain. They don't go in really for a lot of flair. And she mentioned once to me that the only jewelry she ever really liked, you know, was pearls. So we bought her that. They claimed that that was the beginning of this conspiracy to steal technology from this couple that they didn't own. They just didn't own it. Didn't matter. Facts didn't get in the way. So we brought Gavin Lentz in, and over the next couple of years, we were the defendant, and we were limited in what we could do with the company because that was a cloud. The first time that I met this fellow Robner was at a deposition. And when the deposition was over that particular day, he leaned over to me and said, "I always hit what I aim at." That's fine. I'm okay with that because this was not going to be like, you know, like my previous experience. We had some teeth. We had an opportunity to respond to this whole thing. It wasn't like, we get to hit back is what I'm saying. Fighting is fun when all you get to do is to hit the other person. When you get hit back, not so much then. So anyway, this lawsuit went on for 2 years. Finally, we wound up winning everything. We won the technology. We won the original patent. We won everything. Guy's Hospital, they settled. They gave us to get out of the case. Everybody got on our side. We got everything we wanted, except we lost 2 years. And they got nothing. But, and this is a big but, along the way, this attorney accused me and Mary and so on of a lot of things that were blatant lies. Blatant. Not marginal, blatant. Well, I brought a case against him on behalf of myself, Longport, for malicious prosecution. Gavin Lentz embraced this wholeheartedly and took the case on a contingency basis. Proving malicious prosecution on a lawyer, especially a partner in a law firm, I don't know too much about it, but I was told that's a long shot. The first time he was deposed on this case, he shows up with no tie, just gold chain around his neck, Rolex watch, and he was an arrogant asshole. So, there it is. Well, what I'm about to share now is the best part of this entire book from my standpoint. Certainly the part that I savor the most. I decided that I would bring my own look to this deposition. And that was as follows. I had my blue pinstripe suit, white shirt, and a tie that I bought down at this casino. I was sartorically excellent. So we take our seats, and right before he begins to be cross-examined, so to speak, by my guy, I decided that I got up, and I took my jacket off. And then I took my tie off. And then I took my white shirt off. Now, why would I do that? Well, since he last comment he made to me a couple of months before that he always hits what he aims at, I told my daughter that, and she drew a bullseye on the back of a white T-shirt for me. And I had that T-shirt on. So when I was ready, exposing the T-shirt, I turned my back on him. And I said, "Now, does this make it easier for you?" He never recuperated from that. He took his game. His game was off. And he actually answered some of the questions honestly. Oh my God, can you imagine? And ultimately, that particular little gesture on my part was his undoing, because that deposition gave a lot of meat, put a lot of meat on the bone on our malicious prosecution case. He just, every once in a while, I just got up and turned my back to him. So I figured, you know, two can play the same game. And all the time I was thinking about my guy in Denver, he'd probably be proud of me. Anyway, that's how I handled Mr. Rovner on that particular fateful deposition day. That ultimately led to the largest malicious prosecution settlement to date. At that time, $1.35 million. But that wasn't even the best. He had to resign from his law firm. We won. The difference with this case and my previous experience is I had the opportunity to fight back. If I had that same opportunity with the U.S. attorney, I would have taken the same approach. Because people in this world, this is my take on it. People go to intimidation and bullying when they're not smart enough to win straight up, when they don't have the facts on their side. And I can't imagine. I can only imagine how many people have succumbed to this kind of aggressive, intimidating, fear-mongering lawyering. And that's why there's so many settlements. Not because the people were they were wrong, or it's because they just wanted to end and wanted to end it. So, and they have attrition on their side. People want, they don't want that. We couldn't, for 4 years roughly, we were held back. And you can't get those 4 years back, no matter what. So now, after these lawsuits are behind us, and we now have free reign to pursue the building of a company, we spent the next few years basically trying to get CPT codes. We're back to that again. And without them, we've sold scanners, but people, if they can't get reimbursed, it is almost impossible, to generate any kind of a nationwide effective marketing campaign. This, as I mentioned in a previous chapter, I'm not going to repeat it, the technology was harmless. Ultrasound had been used for 50 or more years. And this pressure ulcer, this long-term care market, for the reasons I mentioned, seemed to be the most logical business decision of any government or anything to save money, save lives, make the world a little bit less painful. I don't get it. And Mary and I, we battled this for 9 years, and we agreed that I needed to bring somebody in. I had taken this as far as I could. And Mary, the thing that was most upsetting to me about the lawsuits, which I want to bring up now, is that Mary, as I mentioned earlier, had a cerebral hemorrhage. So after 9 years of doing everything we could possibly do, the technology was there, ready to go, we sold some, but not the amount that would make a real difference. So I decided that I was going to find someone to replace me as the CEO, someone that had contacts way up the corporate ladder. I still felt that this could happen. So I, through a mutual contact, got lucky and met one of the original founders of QVC, Michael Boyd. QVC, for those who don't know, it was founded in Westchester, Pennsylvania. So it was close by. I met with Mike, told him what we were about, he saw what we were doing. I, you know, told him that, you know, we had taken this as far as we could. It needed somebody that had a lot more bang for their buck in the corporate world. And certainly QVC was one of the most successful businesses ever. And he was one of the three founders. He agreed, loved the idea, came on board shortly after 9/11. And that's pretty much the end of my version of the corporate life. 25 years as a CEO, starting in with Stansbury in 1976 and ending with Longport in 2001. Well, I think after this chapter, we could all use a little levity. So with that in mind, up next, from buffoons to baboons.